be brave in bursts and you don't need permission to play, and that we should dare ourselves daily. And that does not mean you have to swim through pudding or jump from an airplane. It could mean you simply put on actual walking shoes and even just go out to the mailbox and back.
Hi, thank you for joining me. I'm Hecate, and this is Finding Okay, a healing podcast for survivors of sexual assault and abuse. I'm here today with Lisa David Olson, who is a speaker, creative coach, podcaster, comedian, and the author of Laughs on Rye. Thank you so much for coming.
I'm really glad to connect. Thank you for asking me.
And now it's time for... Trigger and content warnings for this episode include the following: PTSD, trauma, abuse, child abuse, alcoholism, substances, death, weight, and the pandemic. Please check in with yourself and make sure you're all right to continue. So, are you okay?
I think I'm okay. Today has been a really, really good day. I judge it by the day because that's all we can do during these times, right?
It's so true.
Moment by moment.
Exactly. Yeah, I keep having that conversation with people where it's yeah, I check in the answers used to be much more, you know, broad or sweeping, and instead these days it's like, are you okay? And it's like, well, the last 5 minutes have been okay, so I mean, I guess.
I haven't stepped on a Lego or spilled anything on my white shirt. So yeah, it's been a good 4 minutes. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
I would love to hear a compliment that you've received that you've never forgotten.
When I wrote my book, Laughs on Rye, which is W-R-Y, and it's an improviser's memoir, I had a book launch, of course, for that back when we could have public events, and I couldn't believe it. Someone told me I was brave and that my story mattered and how powerful it was that I shared, because it gave him permission to not hide his story anymore. And I would say that was amongst the height of any compliment I could get. Besides fabulous hair. But seriously, you saying that I was brave to do the thing that, yeah, I just thought, why would anybody want to read it? And then be told how brave I was and that it mattered. That's one I'm keeping in my brain pretty well locked in there.
Oh, that's beautiful.
There's such a power in sharing our stories. And so many people say, I want to write, but I don't know if anybody would read it. And it makes me sad. Yes, you should write it, because your story is yours. And we are human and we connect through stories. Try and get through one day without a story connection. You can't.
Yeah, we need them desperately.
Right.
Narrative is so important to us. So what is your favorite color or color combination, and what do you associate with it?
Ooh, all right. Give me some orange and yellow and red. It doesn't have to be all together, but one of my favorite kitchens we ever had a red wall and a yellow wall. And the energy for me, everything, almost everything I have is yellow. Though if somebody said, what's your favorite color? I would probably say orange, which, let's face it, that's red and yellow together. So I think they're an energy color. They're a joyful color. And I just find joy in yellow. It's hard to be wearing a yellow shirt and not be ready to be happy, I think. I dare you, try it.
And what do you associate with it? Is it just joy?
Energy and creativity and a good mood. I suppose I put it to the sun. You know, the sun is our vitamin D. The sun brings us our plants. Mm. You know, the sun keeps me warm. So yes, I think it's energy and comfort. It's funny, I'm looking up at my office wall right now and I have at least 16 yellow post-it notes across my wall. I guess that's not by accident, is it? I mean, there's words on them and stuff, but the funny thing is it's yellow and then bright lime green. Everything's bright. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I was an 80s kid. 80s teenager, let's be honest.
Yeah, 80s certainly was a, you know, bright, energetic color.
Oh, yeah.
Situation.
Oof. Hot pink fanny pack, baby.
Mm-hmm. I just remember the frilly ankle socks. I was at that age. I was fairly young for the 80s, caught the tail end, but...
You caught the 90s, if you're talking ankle socks, right?
Well, I think, Was that like early 90s at that
Madonna
point?
Madonna in heels with ankle socks. That's what I'm picturing. Yeah, I bet you're right. Late 80s, something in there.
Crimped hair, too.
I forgot about that. That's right. We fight the frizz right now, but we were making it back then. Big, poofy, crinky hair. Yeah.
Just when you're asking yourself, like, can I crimp bangs? No one ever asked, should I crimp bangs?
Yes.
But just, can I do this?
Ruffles potato chip look is very flattering.
Yes.
That's great.
Just looking in the mirror like, good decision, good decision.
Oh my gosh. And the just so that you could look like every other girl your age. That's great.
But if I had to summon you in a ritual, what five things would I need to place at each point of the pentagram on the floor?
This makes me think of the joke where the person has the Ouija board rug, and then they set their Roomba free, their vacuum free, and they summon the devil or something.
That's awesome.
While they clean. Of course, while they clean. So it's good clean devil fun.
Something that I'm demanding from people is that they put giant googly eyes on their Roombas, and that makes that visual so much more pleasing to me.
That's great. And a tail would be nice. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my word. We're all going to have weird dreams tonight. Summon me. Yes. Yes. Thank you. To summon me to this ritual, five things. Number one at the top, the North Star, as it were, coffee. You have to throw on a true crime podcast, not a cold case, but an actual solved crime. You know, where the phone call comes in the last 3 minutes. And they didn't expect this call. That one. An electric blanket, because I have to stay warm. Any kind of animals will draw me in. And if you could add some laughter, I am there. Yeah, I am really drawn to animals. I am that woman who just yesterday when I parked at the store saw a dog in the car and I not only smiled, I waved at it. So yeah, I would be right there. I don't know what happens next, but I've got my coffee and my podcast and I'm snuggled in with animals and laughter. So whatever happens, happens.
It sounds good. And you're in the Midwest, yeah?
Yeah, Minnesota.
I got family out there, so if I start picking up some accent, I'm so sorry. It's not intentional. It's just my childhood creeping out.
Isn't that funny how that happens? I lived in the South for a while as a kid, and if I hang out with anyone from the South, it definitely comes. What would you call that? Muscle memory, I suppose.
I've got a little bit of that too. And I really question like how much of it is valid because I was born in the South and would have had like some formative memory there, but I wasn't there for that long, but it's just, yeah, I don't know.
Must have been those years where things do, you know, they're deep seated maybe.
Yeah. You're hearing language for the first time.
Right. Yes.
I don't know.
You pick it up.
But definitely lots of Midwestern family. So got that open there.
Oh, I left my boat in the over there. I got to get my coat and get my boat.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, that just made me, when you said electric blanket and keeping warm, I thought of where you are. What are three essentials to your self-care?
I found, I'm in my mid-50s and I found yoga and stretching to be so important. I come from a karate background and you have to keep that stuff up. So for me now it's yoga. And I used to think, oh, yoga is just fancy stretching. Yeah. Go and plank for 3 minutes, you know? So I really miss those classes because it was hot yoga. And I think our mats were one hand width apart. It was nothing to drip on your partner's mat, anybody on either side of you. And now you think about that, and that's just horrifying. But it was the heated studio. So you walked into 90 degrees. Oh, I'm getting sad right now. So now I set up my space heater in a bathroom to trap it and do some gentle yoga in the heat that way. It just feels so good. Anyway, so I love yoga. Humor is part of my self-care. It's what I preach. It's what I engage. It's what's created numerous friendships and speaking engagements. Humor is healthy and it's affordable and it's necessary. As kids, we laugh belly laugh over 100 times a day. And by the time we're adults, it's 1 to 4 or 5 times a day. We need it. We need it for our endorphins. It's an anti-anxiety. It lowers blood pressure. It's gets you moving. You want to include others. So it's really nice. So between yoga and humor, I would say creativity. I've been doing my podcast and meeting people, whether I'm on a podcast or doing my podcast, has been so fun. Today I met a belly dancer who's like some sort of neurologist as well. I'm like, I want to talk to you. So that's the kind of podcast I have. The weirder, the better. And I didn't expect that it would be so important, but once quarantine hit, of course, we're not out in coffee houses or even at a bar and anything social. So I have met the most wonderful people and I have a passion for networking. I always did, but I just love connecting the right people. And when people do that for me as well, it's a gift. So that's part of my self-care is connecting because it keeps me curious. My podcast celebrates how curious I am. And it's my platform for that. I leave my husband alone in small doses when I'm podcasting. I'm that irritating dog nudging you. Hey, I'm over here. Hey, I'm over here. Look at me.
What's the name of your podcast?
It's called Stranger Connections. It's probably easiest if you throw my name in there with it. Stranger Connections with Lisa David Olson. I had some really, really great conversations. Just open your mind and you just never know who you're going to be talking to next, and celebrating our differences is really what I'm about.
Yeah, I'm right on board with that. The curiosity thing, and it's for some reason it's squashed sometimes in our childhood, and it's such a beautiful trait in a human. It's so important. Yeah, I actually have here in my notes, I wrote down connecting with people and underlined it.
Oh, yeah.
Because that really popped out to me as something that's very important about you and something that that was really beautiful. And you just seem to have a very genuine love for that, for connecting with people. And that comes through in your book especially as well.
Oh, that means a lot. Thank you. I definitely, you know, that Project in Bravery where I want to meet strangers, you know, in person even, and just daring myself. And I've gotten so many relationships out of that I didn't expect that. I was just being silly and it became a passion of what's your story, you know, in a very kind way to ask it, but everyone's got one. We learn from each other and we love to share our stories. And it's always funny to see how we connect. You know, it's not just about Kevin Bacon and 6 degrees, but we all connect somehow.
Well, something that was in your book that really was really exciting to me and actually is a really great example of that connection is the serious selfies with strangers.
Yes.
I loved that.
All right. Thank you.
And I loved how funny it was, but also it was the perfect example of just your inclination to reach out to other people in a way that so many of us don't. And it just, the way you wrote about it, and I loved that you shared some of the actual selfies in the book. It was charming as hell and really inspiring as well. And I just adored it.
That's great. Thank you. It just was a dare one day when I saw two girls in their 20-somethings. They had just gotten ice cream and, you know, you just picture the big waffle cone and one's the big pink one. And then the other one had maybe, let's just say, cotton candy. So it'd be that awkward blue color. And they were just so cute along the brick wall taking pictures. It was just like, you cannot be sad holding a big colorful waffle cone of ice cream. Rarely do you see someone sad with ice cream, because if it was the sad ice cream, it would be the spoon in the bucket watching Lifetime and crying, which would be more private. But this was the joyful ice cream, and it was just, they were having that moment. And I invited myself, hey, could we get a picture together? And they said, okay. And then I said, oh, wait, let's not smile. And so we did this thing. I said, all right, I'll put my camera on countdown. don't smile. Well, the more you say it, the more you giggle. No, hang on. So there was this whole prep process of don't laugh. And then they would chide each other. Don't, you're smiling. Be straight faced, you know? And so finally we pull it off and doesn't happen on the first one. But then afterward is that wave of laughter too, because it's like, we did it, you know, and it's ridiculous. And then they, when my book came out, somebody found me on Facebook and said, yeah, this girl and that girl, that's my niece and whatever. And it was how we all could connect in the same town. Not all my selfies are in town, but this one happened to be. So then there was like 8 of us that gathered at a coffee shop, laughing, taking a picture with them, with me, with the book in the picture. And then we went out for the afternoon and shopped at like a secondhand store. And we broke out in songs, singing ABBA songs, Dancing Queen. And I just, how would I have had that if I didn't introduce myself and that they weren't also open to play and connect? Mm-hmm. You know, laughter is that ripple. If something funny is going on over at the, if you're in public and it's the store and maybe somebody comes in and with balloons and you can't help but have joy for that and be in that moment, you're like curious and you look and maybe they're laughing and you look in that moment, your focus is right there. You're not in your phone. You're not looking through candy bars, whatever. Your focus is 100% on that moment of joy that's happening. And then mm-hmm. that can bring joy to you. And now you're in line at the store and now you're jovial. Maybe you talk about that exchange with the cashier and that's the ripple effect. And now my next phone call is going to be happier and my next exchange is going to have that burst of energy, that adrenaline buzz.
I like that. That's a good point. How do you choose the people to approach?
I have done so many different ones. I spoke with a man that was playing his blues guitar for the L train in Chicago. I talked to a lady with a giant hat at the farmer's market. There's just a moment in me that says, wow, I want a picture with that person. And they don't always have to be flamboyant or bright in any way or anything like that. But it's just sometimes it's a guy on a bench, or one time it was a kid at a lemonade stand and I got him to hold his sign up. And, you know, never pass up a lemonade stand. They're working and they're embarrassed or they're hopeful and all the things that a young entrepreneur feels. Go and give them money, even if you dump out the lemonade when they're not looking, which is what I do. Go ahead and give them money and give them that moment of interaction. Obviously, we probably don't have those right now, but, you know, celebrate that the kid is putting himself out there. So being that that's my mantra, I did go to the lemonade stand and I did get a selfie with him. So when my book came out, I wanted to include him. And this one was also in my town. And I was able to find out who the parents were. And I can't remember how I did it, probably Facebook. And I reached out to them to get them to sign a waiver and make it all legit. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to have some juvenile in my book without permission. But anyway, his story, that I got to find out through finding the parents was that his lemonade stand was actually in honor of his grandma who was going through breast cancer. And he raised $400 for her toward her walk that was going to go on the next month. And he did that all himself. And it's one thing to support a child and give them attention and give them some money. And it's a second wave that I would not have found out without the serious selfies is the story behind the lemonade stand. We all just assume they're out there trying to make $5 to go buy a game. That was amazing to me.
Yeah. That's a whole new level of connection.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wow.
There's certainly ways to do it besides in person at this time, because obviously Zoom and we are over Zoomulated, but there's ways, you know, I checked in with a buddy of mine who's really having a hard time right now. And we just did a FaceTime call and I was pretty shocked. She was actually in bed. She couldn't even get out of bed at that moment. She just couldn't. And she gets really gray and in mood. And man, am I glad I didn't blow off that call, because we ended up talking about memories and we were having a laugh and we set up a time that we could try and do a distance lunch where you pull up your cars together in a parking lot and just sit so you can at least see each other in person and be safe. And she needed that right then. And so did I really miss her. And so don't blow off those calls. You just never know what's on the other end.
Yeah. Something I'm finding is something that was really put forward in one of the colleges I went to. And then I've been able to, I'm grateful for that because I've been able to carry it into this really bizarre time. And that's being willing to show up imperfectly and as just a human that might not be completely put together, and just being willing to show up and just kind of this come as you are thing. And I think more and more people are making space for that, where it's like, hey, like, I'm not entirely in a great space right now. I'm having a hard day, or, you know, I haven't, you know, taken off this bathrobe in a month.
Yeah. Right.
Or 6 months, yeah. Or maybe 9 months. And then just being like, you know, this is what I got now, and I'm here. This is what I, you know, I'm just come as you are. And being willing to meet each other in that space of vulnerability and just honesty and humanity and connect with each other and not expect the same things that we used to from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these just patinas of professionalism or polish that used to be considered polite or, mm-hmm. Or expected, and they're all just kind of coming off, and I find a lot of value in these much more honest interactions that we're having. You know, even if it's, you know, like, I love that idea of the you know, lunch in a car in a parking lot. Just do what you can. I've had some stuff like that with my friends, you know, socially distanced gatherings, and you know, and there have been some where you know, somebody says like, hey, like, I'm crying right now, but I'll be there. It's like, okay. We're here. It's okay if you're crying when you get here. It's all right.
Like, we'll probably start when you get here. Oh, just, man.
You know, it's all right. Like, you know, just making room for that.
Yes. Oh, God.
Where it used to be like, well, I shouldn't show up if I'm crying, and just being like, it's all right. I was crying 5 minutes ago. Let's all get together. And
it's true. Instead of, yeah, it's a new twist to the having a wine at a happy hour. It's a different kind of wine. It's like, just got to get my cries out. Hang on. Hold tight.
Well, don't stop on my account. Like,
yeah, right. We all have tissue these days. Yeah.
Exactly.
We don't have to buy lipstick anymore. Nobody can see our mouth. So we all invest in Kleenex.
When I was still going to work, you know, masked, I had that weird like transitional time before I had to just leave my job and it got too dangerous. But where I was wearing half a face of makeup, where I was like, all right, I was like, cut my getting ready time in half. And I was like, it's, you know, just like under eyes, and then it stopped. And I was like, all right.
Let's take a quick break.
Insights into Teens, a podcast series exploring the issues and challenges of today's youth. Talking to real teens about real teen problems. Explore issues from braces to puberty, social anxiety to financial responsibility. Each week, we talk about the topics concerning today's youth. We look at how the issues affect teens, how to cope with these issues, and how parents, friends, and loved ones can help teens handle these challenges. Check out our video episodes on youtube.com/insightsintothings. Catch our audio versions on podcast.insightsintoteens.com or on the web at insightsintothings.com.
I'm picturing like a different color foundation, so if your mask comes off, it looks like you have a sunburn issue or something. Just yesterday, I was getting ready for a Zoom, and it was an interview to do a speaking gig that I got. What up?
But, congratulations.
Yes, thank you. But I actually posted on FacePlace that I only curled the front of my hair and I left the back with bedhead. I'm like, just like some people dress business from the waist up, well, I'm doing my hair just the front. It's a time saver. Yeah. I'm never going to turn around on my camera. I'm just going to face it and be all proper.
Yeah.
So you got your pajama bottoms. You've got your nice dress shirt and some fancy earrings and whatnot, and your hair is curled in the front. You're not wearing shoes. Oh, we are a collective mess, and it's okay.
It is.
It's who, it is. Yeah, we're getting down to, okay, I think I like you more. I didn't like the put on you. I like the you.
Exactly. Yeah, I think, I'm enjoying certain aspects of this nightmare.
Right. Remember when everybody thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be 2 weeks? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. No, you didn't do the thing. This is why we can't have nice things.
Oh my God. Accurate. That's great.
Tone change.
Rewind.
So getting back to your book, I really loved the way that it was written, which was very human, and it was these little snapshots. It reflected life very well, because there would be this humorous story, and then it would get human, and then it would get a little dark, and then it would, it was just, I loved that about it. I'm not saying it perfectly, but I just love that the way you organized it kind of reflected life, which is these ups and these downs, and then they all kind of interact with each other in this really beautiful way. And you talked a lot about your history, your past, and some abuse in your past.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I appreciate that you caught it was written as a roller coaster, because that's pretty much everyone's life. Mm-hmm. And for me, I come from a traumatic childhood, and my memories aren't there. So I didn't write for a long time because I can't write this story from childhood, teenage, adult, because my memories come and go. I worked so hard, unfortunately, in blocking that I don't have that chronological order of my life. And I hear a friend say, oh, remember Mrs. Let's just make up a name. Remember Mrs. Peterson from fourth grade? I don't have that kind of memory. I always thought that was like a superhero trait or something, but I just don't have that. I don't retain it. But so I wrote in what I call snippets. They're very short chapters. And at the end of each one is a lesson. And it's not a lesson I'm teaching you. It's a lesson that I obtained in going through that, which was my mother physically abusing us. And here I am. The next one is me pranking my OBGYN during my pap smear, or, you know,
which, I loved that one.
Which I just did again, a different doc. I'm like, so proud of myself. I mean, if I should carry stickers to give myself in these moments, because one of my favorite things I carry is a fake cigarette. I'm extremely anti-smoking, but a fake cigarette is damn funny. And the MA, the medical assistant, put out all the tools, look like, you know, because they're going under the hood to tune you up and whatnot. So there's the clamper thing that opens you up, and, you know, picture like somebody's about to make a really cool salad. All these things are sitting out. And I said, man, I should have brought stuff to add to it before the doctor came in. And she laughed and left the room. And I was like, but wait, I'm Lisa David Olson. Of course I have something. So I went in my purse and I grabbed my fake cigarette, and I'm giggling. And then I grabbed my pack of gum and I set it out there with the tools without touching anything, because it's all very sterile, I hope. And when the physician comes in, I'm on the table with the paper cloth over me, and she comes in, hey, how are you doing, all this? And then she looks and did this awesome double take, zip, zip, looks again, leans way in and looks, and she goes, I don't understand. And I'm just laughing. I'm like, well, I had to make it interesting for you. And then she turned to me and tipped her head a little bit and said, can I get a piece of gum? I had a burrito for lunch and this mask is killing me. She doesn't say a whole lot about the ciggy. So that's the kind of stuff that brings me joy, because it was just a moment for me, really. And if somebody else enjoys it too, hey, great. But that's the kind of writing I did. Our mother was very much an alcoholic, but she always worked. So I guess you'd call that a functioning alcoholic. And what we know today, being older and wiser, and it's this time of life and this time of the world, is that she was self-medicating whatever her mental issue was. Mm-hmm. So she definitely was self-medicating, but for some reason, when she drank, it wasn't one drink. It was getting loaded And then it turned into a rage, and then it turned into the whole night, and then it turned into this figure in my doorway. And then it was, get up, because you did this thing. And I have three siblings, and so we would have to, the four of us would line up. Often the youngest was excused for some reason. Mm. But the three of us would line up, and until someone admitted to doing it, whatever it might have been, take the belt, get hit, cry, freaking go back to bed. One time it was who threw away the mushrooms in the garbage. We weren't done with those or something. So we had to go through the garbage. And another time it was something about the silverware drawer, the utensil drawer had to be rearranged. You know, 3 a.m, you have school in the morning and you're sorting all the utensils and crying and thinking, you know, why did I have to be born into this family? And why isn't dad coming out? Why isn't dad stopping this? He was there. He just didn't, you know. I'm 55, so that would have been what I was in late 70s, early 80s, somewhere in there. That you did not step into. I mean, dad certainly should have, but you did not step into somebody else's family. You did not step in and say, "Oh my gosh, that little boy looks like he's been hurt, or he's afraid of his parent, or something." And how a teacher can say, "Wow, this boy is." He doesn't look like he's eating and he's always hungry. I wonder if somebody could check on him. We didn't have that sort of thing back then. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when my book came out, I thought dad was going to be so proud. And I saved the very first copy to give him. And I sat on the floor of his living room because he's always in his certain chair. And I said, "You get the very first copy." And he said, "Why would you write about this?" And he moved his hand like if you were scooping water behind you, kind of. He goes, "That's in the past." And part of my soul just kind of leaked out. I'm like, what the hell? So all of this happiness since has been, yay, new day. No, some things happened, you know, but ever since my book came out, then we're not as tight as we used to be. And I just figure, I guess I didn't mean to call you out, you know, but I guess there it is. And which I didn't realize until he said that to me. I didn't even think of it. When you read the book, you certainly, not you, but a person might wonder, well, I wonder who her dad was. Because I write about being a daddy's girl in my book.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of like, you sure learn about yourself writing about yourself. And, you know, maybe people that journal had the same experience.
Oh, I'm sorry that was his response. That's rough.
That was so weird. I did not expect that. I thought he'd be very proud. You know, when I was younger, I was very sickly, and I was between being pulled out of bed in the middle of the night or just being afraid I was going to be or any of that. I was very sickly. I didn't get enough sleep and I was nervous all the time. And you're the bird in the road who is eating this rabbit who gave itself for you. So you're eating this rabbit in the road, which is your most awesome meal you ever had. And here comes a car. And what do? You're that crow. You fly away quick. You're always watching for that car. Mm-hmm. That's the way we grew up. And so you never settle down. I have a older sister who has major fibromyalgia and was morbidly obese, got married at 19 to get out of the house, took on 3 stepchildren, had 2 of her own with this guy. So she had 5 kids by the age of 25, no washer, no dryer. Me seeing that, I was number 3. No, that's not for me. That doesn't look fun. I'll be over here. My second brother, also morbidly obese and would hide. He would go to the camper in our driveway. And that was the camper that folds down, a pop-up is what you would call it, but it's folded down when you're not using it. He would crawl in there and stay in there for a day or two. And we would bring him, here's a can of Coke I found. Here's a sandwich. And the parents never knew where he was. I don't know that they looked. I don't remember them looking. And you're just like, that's how he escaped. Yeah. And the younger one was kind of protected. He would argue that point, but go ahead, you tell your story. And for me, my escape was going to my friends or going to the woods. And always, always, always my escape was humor. So back then it was the Carol Burnett Show. And I pretended she raised me because her grandparents raised her because of her parents being alcoholics. But I did miss so much school. I remember having mono and pneumonia at the same time. And then I could never catch up. And so I always felt dumb. I always felt like I was dumb and couldn't keep up and I couldn't understand things. I quit school in 10th grade and my parents didn't stop me. And I moved out of the house at 17 and got a job and shared an apartment with my older brother for a bit until we got our own places, you know, with other people. And so it's just amazing to me how that would go. But we all took our own path. So, you know, my sister and brother ended up having gastric bypass surgery years down the road. So they both tried to regain their health. And I had the other kind of eating issues. Like I couldn't eat. I'm still the bird in the road, just running all the time. Y2K happened and the world was afraid of, we're going to lose our computers. We're going to lose our digital clocks. Oh my gosh, my VCR isn't going to recognize a 00. Oh, mayhem. Much like what we're feeling now, but it was on the different level. Yeah. And at that point, I was only checking on my mother every 2 or 3 days. I was going through my first divorce and had 2 small sons. And it was like, no, boundary time, baby. You know, I was getting the hang of that whole boundary thing. I wish I had had somebody to kind of help coach me with that. But would I have listened back then? I don't know. It's family. It's what you do. Well, that's a BS line now. But so I went and checked on her and the pasta dinner I'd brought her 2 nights ago was still there. And she was on the floor in her feces and urine and couldn't lift her head. And I got her somehow to the toilet. We were both the same size. And somehow I got her to the toilet, but she could not lift her head. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't have money. I had gotten a friend over to watch my kids. The reason I say money is I didn't know what to do. If I should call an ambulance, who pays for it? I mean, just in a panic, all these thoughts go through. And I did call an ambulance and they ended up giving her an IV in the parking lot. They didn't even get her to the hospital and she really nearly died. And that was the beginning of the last time of her drinking. And that was Y2K. So that all happened while she was in the hospital. So that was a whole lot to experience. And yeah. And she survived it. And we had a relationship, though I had to keep it really distant. And she did pass in 2014. And I did see her before she passed. I saw her in the hospital and she was nonverbal because of a breathing machine and stuff, but her eyes, you know, we just talked through expression. It was just really interesting. I didn't have a feeling like I should have, but I was there, you know, and I took care of reconnecting with my younger brother and doing the whole funeral stuff and all that stuff. But at a very distant, you know, very safe emotional wall was up. And
yeah, there is no should have. It is what it is. And, you know, you're present in the way that you can be at the time. And that's okay.
Right. There's no right or wrong. It's just get through it.
Yeah. I think we all have ideas about what we should be feeling in those times. And, you know.
Yeah. And that's what's hard when I have a buddy in her mid-30s and I have another one that's even younger. She's 25. And when they talk about the family things but my mom wants to buy us this. So, okay. And I said, respectfully, since you're sharing that with me, that sounds like it rubs you the wrong way. And if it's not something you want, don't let them just because it's your parent. You've got to start somewhere that, nope, don't cross that line, please. Respectfully, mm-hmm. Give me my area here. This is a gentle boundary, you know, because years later, if you don't set it now, it's hard as a parent to let go and say, oh, I stop helping you now. I'll just say as a parent of adult sons, I haven't found the book yet of how to let go. And it's up to the adult child to kind of say, that's crossing a line. Let me ask you if I need you, something like that. Parents mean well, mm-hmm. but whether they're the normal parents or the screwed up ones, you've got to let them know that this is okay and this part is not.
Yeah, boundaries with parents is pretty rough.
It is.
We're still working on that book.
Right.
It's still being written. We're still figuring this out on both sides.
You mean at your house?
Oh, I just mean culturally. I mean, certainly at my house, absolutely. But I mean, culturally as well. You know, how do you let kids go? How do kids enforce those boundaries as they age?
Mm-hmm.
And at all ages, you know, what boundaries are appropriate? I wish that boundaries were something that were taught to a certain degree or discussed,
mm-hmm.
You know, as we grow up. Because just certainly it's, especially if you're coming from, you know, more dysfunctional households, it's so easy to all of a sudden stumble your way into adulthood and just realize, oh, I don't have any.
Right.
That's why I'm having such a hard time. I don't have any boundaries. I don't understand them.
Yes.
And now I'm supposed to form my own adult relationships. And I've never constructed them before. I've never navigated them before. And I am, you know, lost at sea. And this is rough.
Yeah. Even quarantine Christmas, it's hearing the stories of people saying, but my mom invited us over, so we have to go. And I don't see
that. No. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And a friend who's going to have her baby within 2 to 3 weeks, and she doesn't want people to come over and think they're going to hold her kid. And can you imagine going through that panic right now?
Oh, my Lord.
I said, Zoom was invented for this reason. God made Zoom just for this reason. You know? And it's everybody's opinion doesn't matter. If it's your opinion, you better go with it and just kind of be loud about it. And if they don't like it, that tells you even more. If they don't like it,
Yes.
Now the wall's even higher, baby.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
I found myself reading the book and hearing about your relationship with your mother. And I was really interested in your perspective because you chose to have a relationship with her as an adult. And I was really interested in that because I end up talking to a lot of people who have had to go no contact, where that was what was right for them. So I'm really curious to hear from you about navigating that relationship afterwards.
Yes, it was no contact. And then it would be a gentle reintroduction. So it was almost like retraining a pet of, I told you don't get on the couch. And I know that's just one toe. But okay, now we're going to have to be apart for a while again. And it was not fun, not raising kids and trying to do that. I wanted the kids to know my mom because now she was sober after the near death, where she actually heard the doctor say, if she makes it to morning, we'll give her more blood, but let's just see. That's when she chose to fight, and that she was able to talk about things and apologize in the way that she could. And I knew it was there, but we did have really good times. And then there would come, it was just so old, clunky car. Gosh, I hope it gets me to the store. Oh, I made it to the store, but I have to walk home. You know, it's like, I've never compared it to that before, but it makes sense to me right now in this moment. But it was up and down like that. And so she was humorous, and she's the one that got me interested in performing. And she was my biggest fan if we were in touch, you know, if she was back still drinking, there was no way in hell I would tell her where I was at, because I was horrified when she'd show up. It would just do this physical thing to me. And to this day, if someone smells like cigarettes and a certain perfume or anything that's reminiscent of perfume and cigarettes, I'm out of there. Or Pine Sol. I'm out. No Pine Sol in my house. You know, those triggers, I think scent is one of your most memory evoking senses. So anyway.
They are. I actually did an episode on that.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's called, I can't remember the exact thing, but it's PTSD and like olfactory triggers or something like that. But basically, yeah, just kind of like told a personal story to kind of tie it in. But yeah, it is absolutely of all your senses, olfactory memory. That's your olfactory senses are the most directly tied to memory. And that's, you know, has to do with the part of the brain that your olfactory bulbs are connected to.
Wow. Yeah. And that's, yes. Yeah, so you smell something that might be a hand lotion Nana used, or a dinner that, you know, reminds you of birthdays or something. Yeah, that's really cool that you did that. I will definitely check that one out.
It just, yeah, it's so powerful. It just clicks you, like it's like time travel. It just, you're right back to wherever. And it's transportive in a way that I find other triggers might not be.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. When you say that, it takes me to my grandma's kitchen. She would always slice cantaloupe when I'd stay there. We'd have cantaloupe in the morning and the scent of coffee brewing and cantaloupe. And then I could see her kitchen once I smell cantaloupe and the scent of coffee. And then it's like, oh, I see the little blue windmills on the white tiles and all that stuff. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with mom, we had this back and forth, but once she was actually supporting my brother, what I found out was my younger brother that I said was the baby and he was always protected. I'm pretty sure she drank through that pregnancy and he's 4 years younger than I. And now we don't get along as adults. He's definitely manic. And like, he threatened me when my book came out and he was calling the news stations because they were promoting me and did a story on me. So he's calling them and threatening that they better not be there. And funny thing is I'm a performer in this town and they all know me. So they were calling me and they're like, do you think this is normal? What do you think? Should we send the police over? And yeah, we did. We sent the police over and it took 2 days, but he apologized for, he was having an episode. That was horrifying, but I work in a police department in the day and I know that people didn't hold it against me. I didn't do anything, but for other people that wouldn't know that there is a separation of, if you have somebody who's mentally ill, it's not a reflection of you. You know, you think, oh my God, they know it's my brother and he went nuts. But because I work where I do, I know that it doesn't matter. Your family isn't you. So I at least had that in my back pocket and just tried to launch my book. But when I learned that the money I was giving her, like towards her cable TV, and I would give her an amount towards electricity, and mind you, I'm not a money person, but I knew she couldn't meet all these things. I wanted her to have cable. So I made sure I could afford that for her. And in turn, I learned she was giving my brother money, who never worked. He couldn't keep a job because of his mental issues, but he was enough. Like he could have a conversation with you, but he couldn't work for you. You aren't doing it right. That kind of thing. I'm not wearing a name tag. Well, okay. Well, I've offered to get him help before. And I said, I'll figure out a way to pay for it. I'll do monthly payments. Let's get you some help. So I offered at least 3 times and you can only do what you can do, but he's frightening. He's a racist. He puts out really gross videos of shooting things and just like, you know, things in the woods. I want nothing to do with him. And he actually frightens me. So when I learned that the money I'm giving her is essentially going to him, I was done, man. That sober or not, I'm out of here. Are you freaking kidding me? I'm raising 2 kids, divorced. And yeah, I'm out. So that was one of the last straws. So that was at the end when I wasn't in touch. But guess who called me when when it was time to take care of things in the hospital and then later arrange the funeral. Yeah. Little brother calls me. So we got through it. I'm remarried very happily. And that's how my husband met my brother, was in the hospital. So it was dumb, but we had to get through it.
I loved you talking so openly about your various marriages and relationships, navigating just your life. Well, and I loved hearing about the family that you've created and that you have now, your relationship with your sons and your stepsons. And I was really curious to know if there are just any moment, like your relationship with your children, it seems so healthy. And coming from a history of abuse, I wondered if there are any moments as a parent that stood out to you. And where you just thought to yourself, like, this is it. I'm breaking the cycle. I'm choosing a different path.
Great question. And that's really what it's about. To measure success is you want your kids to have better than you have, which made me the mom that did not let them slip in school. And they didn't have notebooks back then or the, you know, carrying around little laptops, but it was empty out your backpack. And, you know, once they hit 11th grade, I'm like, you went further in school than me. Nice job, you know, and humor was always there, but truly I meant it. I never got to walk across the stage. I finished school on my own, but I didn't get the graduation party. I never got prom, none of that stuff, you know, and I'm not complaining, but when it went on for my boys, oh man, that was, that was all that mattered. And when they were old enough to understand, 9-ish, 10-ish, I told them all about what alcoholism is, and I let them know that it's in my family and that it is what wore my mother out eventually when it was, and that it was wearing her out at that time, and that it's unhealthy and it's emotionally unhealthy. And I let them know a little bit about how I grew up, let them know why I have to sleep certain ways. You know, I have to face a door and I have to, you know, all these different things that people have their quirky things. And for me, it's night frights. But, and yes, I do have therapy. I should have started with that, because please seek therapy, because it's finding the right person and being able to work through things and learn square breathing and learn meditation techniques, whatever works for you, is so important. Oh, it's
what kind of therapy has been helpful for you?
Talk therapy is my best, where I get, so I think it's cognitive behavioral therapy is the best for me, where we talk through it and I get some coping mechanisms. And I'm a person who's a writer, so I always write when I'm in therapy, and I just take notes and, you know, why does that trigger that emotion? Have you thought of trying this? And sayings like, what's your next best thought? Or square breathing to breathe through the anxiety. Where are you feeling your anxiety? And I always put my hands at my chest and, okay, put your hands there, and I want you to breathe in and hold it and let it out slow. A little bit more out, and that kind of thing. And it's, wow, that we need those reminders. So whatever can remind you, whether you carry a favorite stone in your pocket, or you have a sticker in your car, or you wear the same socks every day, hopefully they're clean, but whatever brings you that comfort and reminder, whether it's visual or scent or what, a little bit of lavender on your wrist, maybe to calm you. That's the kind of behavior therapy that works for me. I've been to different kinds where it's, and I'm forgetting the name of it, but it was something about your eye technique. Your eyes look at the stick. Think of the car antenna.
EMDR.
Yeah, that's it.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay.
That's it. Did not like that. Was not for me.
All right. I've never tried it, and I'm so curious.
This gal had this stick, picture a car antenna that extends, and it was in her little cloth bag. And the gal was nice. But again, I take notes and I write down these tools and then I go back and visit this. And that's not what this was. So she extends the stick and she said, think about what's bothering you right now. And in that moment, it was about my dad not being super, this sounds cheesy, but not being super proud of my book. And in fact, feeling called out, and my big aha, I guess I did call him out. And guess what? You learn about yourself when you write about yourself. But then she's like, all right, I want you to think about that. And she pulls out the stick and makes it long. Now look at the tip, and I want you to think about it. Now she's holding it. If you picture the hands on the clock, let's pretend she's holding it at the 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Then as she raises it towards the 12, you're watching it, and she would move it just a couple minutes. And now she's staring at me and her head is to the side, and I just start crying. And I'm thinking about my issue and I'm staring at this. And I cried and like, why weren't you proud of me? And then she's staring at me. So it was a little bit awkward. It was a little bit uncomfortable physically, because I wasn't talking and I wasn't getting anything to write down. And why in the hell am I crying looking at a goddamn stick? What is my problem? And there was no Kleenex by me, by the way. So that's what I remember. And I just did not understand that. And what she's saying, in my own simple understanding of it, is those places were locked in my brain, and to think about them and release them, I think by looking at that, it makes you focus on that issue without looking around a room or talking. You had to think about it, is the way I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it released it. All I know is it wasn't really for me. So I've definitely found people since that are back on. And what does help me is somebody I can talk to. And you know what? Even during quarantine, I did phone therapy and it was just fine, because the offer was to do Zoom. And I thought, you know what? Well, I'm just going to do voice to voice. And the lady was so wonderful. Just so wonderful. I'm so glad I did that.
That's what I've been doing.
You too? Just the voice, not the Zoom?
Yeah, there was, I've just been doing voice. I honestly, for me, it was like, I am not getting out of my robe. And like, I've been seeing this woman for years, and it was like, you don't need to see me in my robe. Like, and at this point, we know each other so well. We've been, you know, working for so many years. Like, I don't feel like it's necessary,
right,
for us to see each other. I mean, your new therapy dog is adorable, but you know, maybe that's like the only reason I might do like a video call at some point. But it's just easier, and it's like I don't have to care about how I look. I don't have to be self-conscious, you know, and I'll just sit here in my PJs and do therapy instead. And it's fine. It works just fine. Mostly I've been doing talk therapy as well. I'm super curious to try EMDR. I did an episode on that as well. And it was a similar story, is about just those like focal points, and all of a sudden something, just a dam just breaks. And it's fascinating, and I have no idea how I would respond to it.
Yeah. I left the appointment very exhausted and deeply sad. Mm-hmm. I did try it twice. I'm not one that's not going to, you know, give it a shot. And I just felt deflated. I came home, I was so quiet. I think I just showered and just sat somewhere for a while, and I couldn't understand that. And that was for me. But maybe mm-hmm. somebody would say that released something really deep. Maybe.
Well, I mean, I'm curious, like if you're ever interested, it's the episode that talks about EMDR is Daisha Part 1, and she talks about it, and she says like 5 sessions is usually like what you should do. That's her suggestion, where you really kind of like start to see that. But
yeah,
feeling safe with your therapist is incredibly important,
right?
Certainly, I mean, having Kleenex next to you, that sounds like a great start.
Because look what I remembered.
Ultimately, like, if you break that down in a weird way, essentially, like, that's you being in a raw place, looking around and not having your needs
right.
met. And that's like what that is. And so I find it interesting that's, you know, what you come back to as a memory, because ultimately, like, isn't that just you saying like, this isn't a place that's safe or secure in the need in, or where my needs will be met,
mm-hmm.
On some level, even if it's just Kleenex.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah,
no, that is really insightful. That truly is. And that's why I thought I had to give it a second try, because I'm not a person that would tell my boys that you got to give it more than that. But no, it wasn't.
That's just not for you. Yeah.
Right. But it's still okay to try things, because how do you know you don't like it if you don't try it? So there.
Exactly. Yeah. It's fascinating. And I think it is really helpful for some people. And trauma is so weird, and it does get, it gets stuck. We store it and we hide it and we tuck it away in weird ways. And, you know, I mean, for some folks just can't talk it out.
Or we vague book about it and then never answer anybody when they all say, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? I guess we just mm-hmm. want attention. We, not me, but pet peeve.
So you state quite clearly that you learned as a child, if your mother was laughing, she wasn't being abusive. And I was wondering how this affected your relationship with your own sense of humor or your relationship with laughter itself.
It taught me that laughter is a distraction, and that laughter can change a room and it can bring people together. But in that moment, I know it's a beautiful distraction, and I can be whoever I want to be. So if I'm putting on a little show, I'm singing a song, or I'm doing one of my fabulous comedy shows for all my Barbies in my room, sold out shows, if I didn't say that. And yeah, Barbie loved me. And she'd ride in her little buggy, that pink beach buggy. And yeah. So then if you were being anybody else, what a relief. What a relief mm-hmm. to be anybody else you wanted to be. And let's do a fake percentage. 89% of comics out there have a sad childhood. That's a fake percentage. Registered trademark, Lisa David Olsen. And because they don't want to be them, they want to take the stage. Most comics, if you see like stand-up comedy, when you talk to that person before or after their show, that's not who you see. And people think, you know, I've hosted comedy for 112 years. And they think that, just picture Robin Williams. They picture him always being on, always being on. No, that's not how comics are. Like before a set, they don't want to talk. They have to get into their head because they have to get out of their own life and out of their own head. Sure, they mm-hmm. tell jokes that represent things they know or the family that they have or anything or their occupation. Of course, we share what we know, but it's also in a persona kind of way. So that's what humor is to me. It was an escape.
Is it still an escape? Because it seems like your relationship has kind of shifted as an adult, where it's something that you've kind of owned in a different way. Is that correct in some way? Projecting an incorrect?
Yeah. Having a comedy troupe for 20 years and 3 marriages, certainly humor has gotten me through a lot. And then running the comedy troupe, producing, being the administrator, being the tax person, being the organizer, the nag, the one who makes sure everybody shows up around the table. There's a whole lot of business that goes with laughter. And in that, what I align is busy work makes me important. What I learned during COVID 2020, you ain't got to be busy. So yeah, that reset for me was a big damn deal. And it was just the whole, I am busy, so I am important. And it's funny because at the same time, I've always said when people are like, oh, you're busy. Yeah, I work full time. I usually have speaking gigs and I usually run a comedy troupe and we do huge shows and corporate parties. And I help my husband with his game shows. You're busy. And I get defensive and I say, it's a choice. And I sound busy, but it's all a choice. You know, but you're writing a book and you've got a podcast. It sounds like a lot, but it's in pieces. And really with the reset, it was okay to not do the podcast early in spring. I didn't have it. Mm-hmm. couldn't get to my microphone. And then comedy shows went away and I didn't miss it at first. You know, it was just that total, mm-hmm. I think, and I'm not alone. I'm not trying to act like I was alone, but it's interesting how you can equate being busy with being needed or being important. So it's okay to reset a little bit. And that's, you have to get creative with your workouts and creative with a lot of stuff. A lot of people do improv these days. It's called surviving.
I'd love to hear more about the comedy troupe.
It's something that I joined after being in a singing group. One of the ladies said to me, you should come to our comedy troupe this weekend. There's tryouts. And I was like, but I don't do comedy and I don't do improv. She goes, no, you should. You're funny and you can sing. You should come. Besides, we need another woman. I was like, oh, I have girl parts. I'll go do that. And I was scared. And it's still something I say today, all these years later. You should do things that make you sweat in the weird places. And I think that is the name of my next book. I think I nailed that today. But it's about trying new things, because even if you hate it, at least you tried and your heart's going, you know, it feels pretty good afterwards. Like, okay, I made it. Like, I jumped out of a plane, or I didn't do that, but I did get tased. So that's fun.
Oh my goodness.
It's 5 seconds. What's the big deal? Oh, it's a big deal, people. Don't do it. But
was it experimentation or how did that come about?
Yeah, at the police department, I was on the reserve unit for a while. So if you wanted to be certified in carrying a taser, you had to be tased, because otherwise if you ended up in court because you tased somebody, how could you say, yeah, I know what it's like. So I was the oldest one and the young bucks were going to go ahead of me. And I was like, step aside, my little brothers. I'm going first.
I got this.
Yeah. Well, no, it wasn't that. It was, I don't want to watch you. I want to be done.
Oh, okay. That's great.
I didn't know if I was going to pee or what, but I did not. It turns out you lock up. Like, imagine biting an electric fence and you can't let go. Mm. But it's that feeling through your whole body. and hearing them say taser, taser, taser is what they say before they open it and pop you. That's a technical term that the cops use. No, it's not. Deploy is the word I couldn't think of. Deploy. But when they say it and you know it's coming, that part is almost as bad as the 5 seconds of just totally locking up. And I screamed the whole 5 seconds, which is on video. So that was nice. But anyway, just trying, doing those things that scare you and make you sweat in the weird places and saying, why not? And that's the mode I was in 20 years ago when I tried out for the comedy troupe and tried improv because I said, I can't do improv. But it turns out I can, and I did, and I even teach it. And now I use the creativity that I learned in 20 years of performing, teaching, participating in improvisation, producing shows. I use all those talents now, and I do creative partnering or coaching for, I just helped a gal today, a stranger in a group chat, and she was trying to modify the title of her book. And I was privately messaging her, hey, it seems like this and it seems like that. And you're a belly dancer, but you're writing about something else. Why wouldn't you put those two things together? I want to know more. You know, just giving her the creative ways when you take two opposite things, like ketchup and ice cream, doesn't work, but you didn't know that until you tried. So why not? Why not try?
What's the name of the comedy troupe?
It's Heart of La Crosse because it's in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And that is the family I created and chose, not in a cult way, but in a trust way. Because with with improvisation, you have to have each other's back. So if you and I stepped onto the stage because the audience said that we were working in a convenience store that happened to be located inside the women's room of McDonald's, okay, we go with that. That's a yes and. We build on that. But we don't know who's what position. So the first one to speak is establishing the scene. So maybe you say to me, you ready to check out? Okay. You just told me that you're the cashier in this bathroom convenience store in McDonald's. Now I know I'm the customer. But if neither of us speak, you know, somebody's got to speak. Maybe they told you that your name was Sally and I can see in your face, you forgot your name. And I say to you, maybe I said to you, hey, what's your name? And you give me that look. And I say, your name tag says Sally. I had your back. I asked you something, then I realized I was trying to help you, but then all of a sudden I realized you didn't know. So I've got your back. That's the kind of group that it became. And that's when I learned the best part of trust was in showing that you had somebody's back, in being there, committing to the scene on stage, committing to the conversation with your partner, with your boss, with your kid. And listening to hear, not listening to one up them, listening to hear and say, that person just told you about their vacation. And your urge is to say, well, I vacationed too. And I went to a better place than you. And, you know, all these things. Instead, ask them a follow-up question to learn more about it and let them feel heard. And in my work at the police department, answering phones and dealing with records, it's a damn good thing I have that skill of letting someone be heard. Because many times, whether they're complaining of a prank call, a neighbor, maybe a domestic, maybe that, let them be heard. And if it's not a police matter, such as a spam call that I can help them with, let them be heard, tell them they did good. And so many times I end up just laughing on the phone and there's that joy spread that I've talked about. We find a moment of levity. Hey, you didn't give them your bank account number. That is amazing. And you know what? You get ice cream for supper and you tell all your friends and all that, and they're laughing and they feel so important because they are. They did do good by not giving the bank account numbers. Not all stories end that way, but it's really listening to your partner and listening to whomever is in that scene with you. And that scene can be a conversation with family. So that's something that is kind of a challenge. I throw out a lot of challenges, but the next person you talk to, are you listening to hear or are you listening and waiting your turn to speak?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something I've been working a lot with. I find myself like tripping on that in the podcast, and it's been a really beautiful way to notice those things in ourselves. And so I've been really, the ways that your improv has gifted you with those lessons that you carry on into different parts of your life. That's something that I've been noticing, these hidden gifts in podcasting as well.
Right. And it's podcasting is such an interesting thing for myself because of that, letting someone interview you or being the interviewer, you know, like it's, that's two different worlds, really. Like I'm craving to ask you things too. And I'm stopping myself because it's like, we're not supposed to do that, but yeah.
No, you can go ahead. I enjoy this, you know, being a back and forth in a conversation. And I just agreed to guest for someone. I'm so terrified. I haven't done it.
Oh, you haven't yet?
No, we had technical difficulties, and I wasn't able to join their call, and it got postponed, and COVID is so weird, and you just, you know, you gear yourself up, and you're like, all right, I'm going to do the thing, and if it gets postponed, it's like, well, now I'm crazy for 2 weeks, I'll get back to you when I'm less crazy. I don't know. It's so weird and so weirdly human.
Yes. Ugh. Because you gauged yourself up. You were gearing up for that and you were getting your brave pants on. And
exactly. I love a brave pants.
Yes. But then were you relieved when it was canceled or were you like, oh man, I was all geared up?
No, we were both pretty disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, and it was early on. This was months and months ago. So you know, she just reached out again. And I'm like, all right, wear my brave pants.
Yes, yes,
I got to get them back on.
Yes, that's you've got them. Just make sure that they've been through the wash. Make sure they're clean. Don't be going looking for them 5 minutes before the show.
but was there something that you wanted to ask me?
No, it was earlier when we talked about weather and things like that. I was afraid to say, because I know that you're not saying where you are, and I didn't want to say anything like, oh, and where do you live? You know, I would normally say that or ask different things.
But I'm like,
I know that you're kind of behind the scenes, so I didn't want to say anything.
Yeah, no, I have, you know, said that I'm like within an hour of New York. I have revealed that in the past. So I've got kind of like a radius that I'm honest about to a certain degree. Very beautiful area. Very, very woodsy.
Oh, nice.
It's lovely. Mm. Lots of nature.
Love. You got to be around trees. And for me, I got to be around the water. So.
Yeah. What water is around you?
We are by the mighty Mississippi, but Minnesota is the land of 10,000 lakes. So.
It is.
So whoosh. Is. I got all that going on. So.
People. You ever been to the Boundary Waters?
No, but my first hubby has, and he often would take the kids. I think this is the first time in 20-some years he hasn't gone. So that's too bad. It's 9 hours from where we live. Heading from Minnesota, Wisconsin to towards Canada. Have you been there?
Yeah, my family went when I was in high school. I want to say it was like 2 weeks or something like that, and we just canoed through the Boundary Waters, and I think maybe saw humans twice.
Oh my gosh!
And one of them, once it was somebody like far away, like, you know, either in like another canoe or at another campsite or something, but the other one, it was when we were on our way out of the Boundary Waters and there was another group on their way in, and it was an Outward Bound group, which is the, you know, the group that takes like troubled teens
and kind of like the
step before boot camp where, you know, like or military school where they take teens that, you know, are on the edge of having to be sent to juvie or to, you know, military school. And they're like, no, let's get these kids into shape. Like, you know, you got to make the change. And so none of them wanted to be there. They were all furious and miserable and had probably been rolled out of bed, like, you know, at some obscene hour of the morning to be shipped off into the middle of nature with a whole bunch of other teenagers that didn't want to be there. And they're all carrying their packs and their canoes. We're heading out of this beautiful, mystical, like, oh my gosh, we're so at one with nature and connecting as a family. And, you know, seeing beautiful wildlife, and we're coming out of that. We all passed each other on the path, and I just will never forget my mother just like not gauging the vibe at all was like, there are otters playing up ahead. Do you want it? There's otters. They're so fun. Go look at the otters. They're all just glaring at her like, oh my God. And it was great.
Were you guys-
I wanted to hear wolves, but we didn't hear any wolves.
Loons probably, right?
Lots of loons. Yeah. I love me some loons. Those calls in the middle of the night. They're very like, that's my childhood right there, is that the loon song in the middle of the night.
Oh yeah. Mm. So cool.
But and a moose skeleton.
Oh.
As well. That was pretty groovy.
God, that would be. My boys saw a car once. And they don't know how it got there. A car, an actual vehicle, like rotted out old time car frame.
Oh, in the
I don't know how deep they were. They would always portage and go with their dad, because he is just passionate about boundary waters. And oh my gosh, he knew all the rules. You leave the woods better than when you go in, and you know, that kind of thing. And very respectful of nature. And I love that my boys have that. But yeah, so a car. Important. You're like, where? How? What?
I have
a moose
skeleton, questions.
I get it, but yeah, so that I don't get. Anyways, that just always makes me think of that, like you said, the moose skeleton and whatever. But no bear, no bear.
We never saw them, no, and we followed all the rules.
Yeah.
You know, so all the bears I've seen have been, you know, at my grandparents' house, and then recently one actually in our area here in the Northeast.
Mm.
My partner, there's one in the area, a black bear, you know, so nothing too alarming.
Yeah.
But wandering around, and I saw it up in the area where there's a beekeeper. So there's somebody with beehives and a little honey business. And so the bear was, you know, snooping around, and luckily I heard there was no damage, but you know, some of the hives were pushed over, and
wow.
But I don't think there were any massive bee deaths.
That is something.
But we got a lot of koi wolves in our area.
I don't know what that is.
That's it's a contentious topic, because what some people consider, you know, a koi wolf or not, but it's basically a mix, to some degree of coyote, wolf, and usually domestic dog is in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, because wolves have been so hunted and pushed out and forced into these areas and territories, and they've been struggling to survive. Part of that struggle to survive has sometimes meant interbreeding with coyotes, which are a natural enemy of theirs.
Oh, okay.
And so you get koi wolves, which are, you know, sometimes they can look so much like dogs. You know, like I came across, my partner and I were driving in the middle of the night, and this was before I knew that they were in our area. And we saw a dog trotting down the road, and we're like, and I keep a leash in the dashboard in case we ever come across a stray, so, you know, or a lost dog or something. And so I was like, oh my gosh, pull over, you know. So we went back and got out of the car, and I've got this leash, and I'm trotting after this dog in the middle of the night on a dark road, and I'm going like, here, hey, hey buddy. And there was just this moment when trying to, you know, like, oh, come on buddy, hey, and like an idiot. And there was this moment where this, and it just, it looked, cause initially when we drove past it, we both had this moment that neither one of us said out loud, because we both went wolf. And then we went, it's not a wolf. There are no wolves. That's dumb. And didn't say anything. We're like, it's obviously a dog.
Oh, no.
And cause it's too big to be a coyote. And it had like German Shepherd markings on it. It looked so much like a whole bunch of different stuff, you know. And so I was convinced that I was following a dog down the road until it turned and looked at me, and I stopped, and I just had this moment where I was like, ooh, something's not right here.
Oh my.
And that was the moment where I was like, ooh, this isn't, it was just this primal moment. And I that was the moment when I think I realized that I might be chasing a wild animal down a dark road with a leash, going, "Here, boy, here, boy." And it trotted off.
Oh no.
And I think I reported it as like a lost dog or something. Oh. And it was after that I started learning, like, no, actually there's coy wolves. Oh, and they can look like domestic dogs. And
unreal.
And it was just, you know, so there's a very healthy pack of coyotes and coy wolves in our area, and a family of foxes, loads of deer, raccoons, possums.
Oh, sure.
You know, all the good stuff. And then fisher cats, which are weasels.
Oh, I thought you were saying fish, comma, or cats, but you said
no,
fisher
cats. Fisher cats. Yeah. And those are very mysterious, and you almost never see them.
Mm. God, that's wild. It just the visual of you going down the road of that leash.
Oh, my God.
Kissy noises and
like, here boy just looked at me, just sort of like, really?
God, that's amazing. That is amazing.
Oh, it was such a weird moment.
Oh my word, that is really a good story. somewhere there's a meme around where somebody posted, you know, I got this cat, is it yours? It seems really upset and not litter trained, and it was like a possum or something. She probably made it come in her house, you know.
Really, yeah, some man. Oh, there was a my partner had a roommate that was not real woodsy, didn't really know his stuff, and he went off for like a, you know, blacksmithing workshop or something off in, you know, like the woods of the way upper like northeast or something.
Mm-hmm.
Was there, and I think like staying in like a cabin or something, and while he was doing this workshop, and, you know, befriended this stray cat, and you know, had cats at home, and you know, had been feeding it and taking care of it, and was like, oh, it doesn't seem to have a family, and, you know, and should I bring it home?
Mm-hmm.
You know, should I bring it home with me to our apartment, you know, that they shared at that time? And, you know, and described it and said it's real big, but, you know, like, it's, you know, part of its tail is missing, you know, so I guess it's been in some fights. And my partner just had to, you know, like, stopped at a certain point with this description, was like, does it have slightly tufty ears? And just like, as he talked to his roommate, realized that his roommate was contemplating, should I bring this bobcat home because it doesn't seem to have a family? And just sort of like, buddy, no.
He had to have been in an accident. His tail is missing.
And yeah, his poor tail.
The tufty ears. That is just
I'll save it.
Yeah, I got you, buddy.
Yeah, come home with me.
You get along with my other dog. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, friend, you are not bringing that bobcat into this apartment.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's not got a collar on. He must have lost it somewhere along the way.
Yeah, poor thing.
Yep. I got a bottle. We'll be fine. We'll nurse it. Oh, my word. Mm. God, that's funny. Glad it wasn't me, because that's the kind of thing that would happen to me.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Well, I'm honored that you have this space for people to have a safe conversation and share. We do learn through stories, and we do connect through that sharing and that bravery, and the circle of trust that you've created is just really necessary. And I really honor and applaud you for having this and hosting it, because yeah, that does take energy away from you as well. And so thank you for your work.
Well, thank you.
I think it's important for us all to connect through stories and find the people that you can share with. And like you said earlier, I won't be there right now. I just have to finish crying quick. I mean, that just really struck me. That is just so relatable. And it's an instant, I like you, you know, it's just that instant. That is so cool. So the thing that I always wrap up with when I ask people to take away an action item is just to be brave in bursts, and you don't need permission to play, and that we should dare ourselves daily. And that does not mean you have to swim through pudding or or jump from an airplane. It could mean you simply put on actual walking shoes and even just go out to the mailbox and back. It could mean you start a new exercise routine or you make a phone call. And I always remind people to reach out to a friend if you thought of them, send them a message. Pick up a pen pal. Nothing's more fun than handwritten mail. These are the things that I like to send as my call to action, is just connection. Connection doesn't have to be that we're going to meet for dinner, because it's just not okay right now. But you can be creative and you can let somebody know that you were thinking of them, because more fake stats, 9 out of 10 times that person will respond and say, "You don't know how much I needed that just now."
Mm-hmm. It's so true. And is there anything that you'd like to say about your healing process and what's helped you?
Knowing that I'm not alone is helping. When I was a kid, I always thought that it was only me. And I always felt bad because I couldn't have friends over, because you never knew what the night was going to bring. So nowadays we're more apt to notice and help. And a portion of proceeds from my book goes to the Family and Children's Center in my town, because we didn't have that when I was growing up. But there are police and teachers and responsible neighbors and that do notice when something's off with kids and are better at stepping in now. So if you do think something's off, I mean, don't get in somebody's business if you're not sure, but if you do have a gentle way to just check on somebody and kind of a really gentle way to just say, "Are you okay?" and check on people if you're not sure, or make sure that there is somebody. Kids are kind of stuck if there's not, but making sure that yourself as healing, that you are seeking some sort of therapy. And there are things out there that don't cost money. There are different ways that you can get help. Don't mm-hmm. think you're alone, and keeping the words in your head and keeping the thoughts in your head makes them grow. And to share them with somebody else is how you empty it out. Trust me. And if you can't talk to somebody, make sure you're writing it out, and then you destroy the paper or whatever it takes, but visualize getting the words and the thoughts out of your head. Work on the breathing exercises. Look up square breathing and see what that is, and get enough rest, get enough water, get your exercise, take care of yourself, because we get one spin on this giant rock. Whatever you believe in the after stuff, this is the now, and you deserve a great day.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is there anything that you would like to add or to talk about that we haven't talked about?
No, you're a fabulous interviewer. I would invite people to hop over to Facebook and join the Counterclockwise Facebook group. And that is all laughter. We pretty much just steal memes and post them and comment on each other's posts. And it's a safe space. If it's anything R-rated or more, I just have my admins remove it, because I'm staying around PG-13. It's a great space to just go for a laugh. And I've had great feedback where people say, "I needed to smile, so I went to Counterclockwise." So if you do, and please participate, you don't have to. You can just lurk with joy.
I like that.
I just made that up. Yeah.
<It's> perfect. Oh, so many of us are doing that these days.
I don't blame you. Yeah. So yeah, pop on over and join the fun.
Yeah, I'm also going to share, I think in episode notes, a link to some of the YouTube stuff of yours that I found, which was fun on the phone.
Oh yes, I just produced an album and it's all audio. It's messing with telemarketers that called. So that is what I started with my first husband. We had an old answering machine and it would record incoming or outgoing calls. And so if we got a telemarketer on the phone, if you got home, because we worked separate shifts and the light was blinking, we knew that one of us got a call. So we would mess with them. They never got to their sales pitch. So I had help with medical issues. I had help with child raising. I had help finishing a song. So yeah, that's called Fun on the Phone, mm-hmm. and it's spelled PHUN for fun. It's on mm-hmm. Apple iTunes and other places. I don't know. I just released it, so I don't know how to find it yet. I got to wait till my kid is home and can teach me.
Oh, that's so relatable.
Exactly.
I love it. No, but I listened to some of those and they just, oh yeah, that joy, and you just really had me giggling.
Oh,
and
yay. Good.
Oh, it was, and I mean this in the absolute best way. You are such a brat.
Ah, I love it.
It was so great.
Oh, I love that. I own that. Thank you. It's like, I don't get why you're married three times. Oh, now I get it. You are a brat.
No, it was just in a way that like warms the heart and just, oh, it's so good. Just so strangely wholesome.
Wow,
love it.
Oh, thank you.
Just, oh, and you doing like the one that's the awkward giggle.
Yes. Thank you. I love it. Yeah, that was years in the making, but it's something I usually play when I'm out on my speaking engagement. So now I don't have to use a suitcase to haul the books and the CDs anymore. So it kind of works. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, welcome. I moved them from cassette to CD and that was a big step. Now I'm on iTunes. Woot woot.
Yeah.
Look at me go.
Load. Yeah, yes. Definitely.
Oh, that's funny. Oh.
So thank you so much for coming. This has been a joy.
I really appreciate it. The questions and how you prompt the things are just so gentle, and I really respect it. And thank you for this great space. I appreciate you.
Oh, I appreciate you too. Thank you so much for coming and for being who you truly are, and for being so, so open and vulnerable and honest and sharing so much of yourself and your work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to take a look at the episode notes to check out Laughs on Rye, Lisa's podcast, Stranger Connections, and the album Fun on the Phone. Please write in to podcast.findingok@gmail.com with feedback, questions, and episode requests. Let me know if you're interested in joining me on the show. I would love to have you. Finding OK is crowdfunded and paid for out of pocket. I am unemployed with the pandemic and anything helps. Please consider donating. You only need $1 to help. A huge shout out to Amy for her contribution. It has made a huge difference. I truly appreciate your support. It means the world to me. Thank you. Celebratory air horn noise, but a little quiet because my partner is asleep and I don't want to wake him. Bwah, bwah, bwah. Please visit buymeacoffee.com/findingokay to contribute. A link can be found on the podcast website, www.finding-okay.com, and I post links routinely on my Facebook page. I also post relevant articles, art, memes, and resources daily. Feel free to friend me, Hecate F-O-K, H-E-C-A-T-E, F.O-K-A-Y. You can also find me on Instagram. I've created a private Finding OK Facebook group for survivors. You are welcome there, and I hope you'll join us. Please take a minute to rate and review the podcast to help me reach more listeners. Reviews are featured on the new website, and you get a shout out on the next episode. If you can't afford to donate, leaving a review and sharing online or through word of mouth is the best way you can help the podcast. Please share, subscribe, and donate if you can. Thank you again for listening. This has been Finding OK. Black Lives Matter. Take care of yourself.
Your heart is a muscle the size of your fist. Keep on loving. Keep on fighting. And hold on. And hold on. Hold on for your life.